Thank you for this opportunity to share minds and hearts on this topic. We'll certainly be anything but stagnant this morning. The underpinnings of the philosophy of theosophy are ancient, they're eternal, they're impressed within each heart. And as we as students are attracted to the search for universal truth, we begin to recognize and to consider the many phases of perfectibility. What comes to mind for many of us are things like potentiality, power, potency, purpose, practice, and ultimately perfectibility versus perfection. We begin to ponder the circle of life, the spiraling of life, the pursuit of perfection. We ponder the eternal process of progress and becoming, the journey without a final, finite destination. It's mind-boggling, isn't it? One aspect of our duty as soul using the human state is to study the collectivity of all souls as well as the particulars of our own. Looking around at the collective expression of soul in humanity, we see the expressed notion of perfection, the trust, the innate trust in perfectibility. That common concept is the root of all pursuits. It is self-reliance, confidence, courage. The infant knows no bounds as it seeks to acquire language and mobility. Those pursuing physical perfection in sports, in health, in the chase for attractiveness, will eventually face a limit of form. Those souls seeking intellectual prowess and power will eventually come to a natural decline in cognitive powers despite education, and only after discovering that reason and logic are simply not enough. Those pursuing psychological perfection and therapies, medications, and coping mechanisms will find that emotional states cannot be thwarted in their cycling. Those pursuing psychic perfection and powers will find that without a full maturity of ethics and spirituality, their experiences will be far less than perfect. And just when any one soul feels that they've reached the summit of their pursuits to reach perfection, karma will present a new lesson of insight. So-called perfection is not forever. So yes, the belief in perfectibility is common to all. The discovery that perfection on the plane of these transient expressions is impossible, gradually dawns on all. The stronger the self-centered attachment to the goal of being or becoming perfect, the worse the outcomes for the soul's pursuits. But the greater the opportunity to go back to the drawing board to try once again. There is a common phrase, to err is human, to correct is divine. The philosophy of theosophy offers the insight that soul in the human state is both the one erring and the one endeavoring once again. It is also the one witnessing and correcting the entire process. There is duality. There's no destination of a final perfect state. Instead, there is the process of progress, the process and practice of self-devised evolution within the conditions experienced. There is potential. Perfectibility is a spiraling journey or a pilgrimage for soul. If we look at the major world religions, we see one common view that's offered up. Christianity, Confucianism, Buddhism, Shintoism, Hinduism, Sikhism, each teaches that the kingdom of God is within each of us. The true nature of the eternal self, the soul, is a profound realization of the conviction of universal brotherhood, a brotherhood that answers the intuitive call to be the best possible, to be all that we can be in this incarnation, so as to serve the ideals that we hold. The infant lives in the moment, unconcerned with the statistics of his or her failures to roll over, to stand and walk, to talk perfectly. So too, the soul of the adult needs to continue to pursue its expression of perfectibility without despondency over slips, slides, and failures. These same world religions teach their followers that wisdom is far more valuable than riches, that the human is made in the image of God. But these concepts are merely at root the reflections of the philosophy of theosophy. Each soul is a ray of the divine emanating from the unknowable absolute. The kaleidoscope of being that we perceive in the human kingdom is a manifestation of the application of the wisdom gained and the wisdom being pursued. Spiritual potentiality, perfectibility, is sensed as limitless potency. And there are many examples of partial genius walking among us. These are souls who have pursued mastery or perfection in one area of life and who come back into incarnation able to express that particular interest or talent. It is simply natural cause and effect, karma and reincarnation that we are observing. So, using reason, if we share a common source of deific essence, if we share intuitive realities, if we can see such partial genius among us, and if we can occasionally achieve a degree of spiritual practice, then we have evidence that all, each and every one, can bloom into full mastery in relation to the conditions of the current period of manifestation. Each is perfectible forever and ever, world without end. This reasoned faith, this soulful observation of life, also has evidence across the duration of our entire Manvantara, our period of manifestation. From oral legends and myths from the earliest times to the teachings of the many saviors born among nations, to the historical accounts of great souls, Mahatmas, exemplifying, teaching, and preserving our spiritual heritage, our shared spiritual heritage, we have many proofs of those who have come before us, endeavored to perfect their use of all planes and substances and who have served and continue to serve as guides to us all. There is a boundless plane in which occur periodical manifestations of beings that can use what they have perfected in their past to empower all in a new application of the pursuit of wisdom, the pursuit of soulful expression. Robert Crosby wrote in the Universal Theosophy, page 115, that all beings in the universe have evolved from lower points of perception into greater and greater individualization. The beings that are greater than humans have already passed through our stage. There are always greater opportunities beyond the illusion of any perfection of any one great race, planetary chain, or solar system. Crosby continued to write on page 119 of that book that such perfected beings come into the world from time to time, recognized by just a few, perhaps. But that is not the goal of those more perfect than we. They are the promise of the fundamental propositions of unity, of lawful development, of the evolution of the lowercase self by the self with a capital S for the all cap self of all. These great ones, these Mahatmas, have developed the abilities that transcend conditions of brain, body, and personality. They offer the promise that we too are perfectible, that eternally we can continue to evolve into all-knowingness, into generators of right ideas and ethics for right living, into magnetic forces inspiring and uplifting all, so as to perform actions on the basis of right ideas, the fundamental ideas and principles of the philosophy of theosophy. We can act as the divine beings we truly are, even if we begin by acting as if. In Magazine Theosophy, Volume 18, you'll find an article entitled Perfectibility. It was published in 1930 at the height of a crisis in American history. The article offers great hope in the darkest of times. The masters of wisdom are the living embodiments of the doctrine of perfectibility. They are real as well as ideal. Their object is the practical realization of universal brotherhood. The path to perfection that the Mahatmas exemplify is not one of compromise. That path to perfectibility that the Mahatmas exemplify is the palliative use of knowledge, the palliative use of the potential that is offered by the environment that we have karmically. They are the admixture of the inner spiritual life with the outer communal life. They are the exemplar of what we too can be as that admixture. So, perfectibility, whether cosmic with a K or cosmic with a C, or earthly, beyond all imaginable limits. The teachings of theosophy are the unfolding of the one life, the production of translucent men without error, possible within this period of manifestation and beyond. Theosophy is the comforting knowledge that there is no end to perfectibility. It is the promise of ever becoming within and for each period of manifestation. It is the source of the infant's confidence and courage. It is the root of all human pursuits, no matter how misguided they may be for a time. So here's to our shared pilgrimage without final destination. Here's to perfectibility, the antidote to becoming stagnant. I'll bet you arrived this morning with your own considerations on the subject. SL?
That last comment. In our personalities, we may find ourselves exhausted or indifferent, certainly tending towards stagnancy. But is that stagnancy lasting forever? Isn't there some spark of deific essence within ourselves, some expansive force that impels us to progress, even if in this life or at some time we reject it? We think Krishna says something like that in the Bhagavad Gita.
Yeah, you know, when we consider each day, when we consider becoming conscious, when we're still laying with our head on the pillow, and that just that pure sense of existence is a minor reflection of that permanent spiritual pilgrim soul in all of its aspects. And then as the day proceeds, we may have the best laid plans for the day. But as John Steinbeck wrote, you know, the best laid plans of mice and men oftgang astray. Conditions of karma, events in our lives, close to home, within the greater family, within the community, news on the internet, something may occur that for a while cause the brain to recoil and distill, may cause the body and the personality to withdraw like a tortoise into its shell. And that kind of period of rest, it can be seen as a power in a pause, the pulling within to reflect for a time. Not that we're seeking to be permanently passive, or as the Gita would advise, tamasic, stagnant, polluted, never acting. No, the eternal soul may come through an experience in which there is reaction to outer stimulus, there is a drawing in within, and we may be for a period of time, a duration of despondency or horror, something that immobilizes us. But that inner eternal self that we first sense in the morning on the pillow, that we may become one with during periods of manifestation and meditation, that eternal drive, that impulse from within, is eternal and will move us back into action, first an idea and then gradually in outer benefits. I heard something earlier this week that was an interesting tool and seemed very theosophical. It was a very brief statement of cognitive behavior therapy, that we consider the symbol of a triangle, where each angle, if it's adjusted, will affect the other two angles in the triangle. And the speaker was talking about one point of a triangle being thought or ideation, another point of the triangle being action, behavior, and the third angle of the triangle being emotionality. And that as we as thinkers, as spiritual essences begin to adjust any one of those angles, we affect the other two. So theosophically speaking, if we start with our thoughts during the darkest periods of the cycles of our incarnation, and we begin to adjust our thought, what we're pondering about, considering the fundamental theosophical principles and how they might be exemplars and also energizers, as we begin to change our thoughts, then we begin to change our degree of emotionality and the degree of our actions. So that might be of some help. SL follow-up and then Theosophy Hall.
Yes, just a follow-up on that interesting idea. But also, if that triangle is helpful, even if we can just begin with changing our actions, the way we behave, the way we speak, that's going to have its effect on our thought and feeling as well. So we can begin wherever we are in the triangle, but to the interconnection, the results will come.
We can begin wherever we are. And during the talk, I think I used the phrase act as if, A-Z-I-T. Act as if, you know, we may only need to change a behavior for the very despondent, the very, very depressed. Getting out of bed may be a very big deal. Doing self-care hygienically, putting on clean clothes, those things may be huge behavior changes. But as simple as they may seem, they will affect the other two aspects. Theosophy Hall, you're up next.
Thank you. So when we're looking at these changes then, we were just wondering about that whole idea behind will stands desire. Because if we want to make any changes or adjustments, our desires would have to change then. And then along with those desires, we guess we would have to look at the whole idea of motive too. So it just seems that there's quite a few issues involved with this whole idea of perfectibility, because we do have to make changes. So our desires definitely have to become involved with that.
Desires do, absolutely, and motives are truly key. The philosophy has very, very few fundamental ideas about how to go about practicing, making the effort to become one with perfectibility and to offer that up altruistically for everything and everyone. One of the recommendations is meditation. So if we can set up a routine, again, this is an action. If we can set up a routine that very, very early on in the day, prior to any hygienic practices, prior to taking any food, prior to doing any kind of social encounter, if we can set up a period of reflection and meditation and set a tone for the day, at one, set a tone, we can set up a seed idea that we habitually come back to, which may be about desire. What is it that I envision for the coming day that I hold as an aspiration that's universal and altruistic, that is as selfless as I can imagine? If we set up that habitual thought pattern, that habitual action of sitting quietly and thinking, and envisioning, what we're beginning to do is plant the seed to use the universal concept of desire as compassion, as unconditional love, as a strong identification with the oneness of life in all its manifestation. And then if during the day we try our best, moment by moment, to be metacognitive, self-reflective, to kind of be an anthropologist, soul sitting on the shoulder of the personality as a witness. Am I fulfilling the promise of that early morning desire that I tried to set up? Do my motives in this moment match? Am I disharmony? Have I created disharmony with my original intent? By the end of the day, when we're getting ready to put the body and the personality to bed, to into deep sleep for the soul, if we revisit the day as a retrospective, and again become observant, contemplative, meditative, and think back, what was the aspiration? How did I do? Where can I improve? What maybe could I have done to assist or help another? That kind of work, inner work, begins to set up natural grooves and natural cycles of the return of the impress of life. And so working with motive, working with desire becomes easier and easier. And then that it's true, behind will stands desire. We can become perfectible in that area across the duration of life and lives. SL?
To go back to that idea of times of apparent falling back or regression or stagnation, if we find ourselves in that point of the cycle, which we inevitably will, we might initially react with some despair, disappointment, maybe some guilt or shame. But it really, we think in terms of this process of perfectibility, it's really an opportunity to understand how far we've come, where we've made mistakes, develop compassion for the sufferings of others, the difficulties of others, and also an opportunity to pull ourselves out of it, to exert our will. Mm-hmm. So there's so much to be gained. It's a necessary part of the cycle and shouldn't be looked as a something to be avoided or regret.
Yeah, there's no regrets. There's no self-flagellation. As soul, we are on this plane of experience, planted where we are, in order to witness, in order to observe, in order to take the knowledge that we're acquiring and transmute it into wisdom. How, as soul, in the midst of what we're experiencing, act as purely and as ethically as possible. And so if there's a slip or a slide, if there's a degree of regression, it becomes an aha moment. It becomes an opportunity to say, wow, okay, that occurred. Let me consider it. Then I'll respond to it and move on. So that in the student's opportunity, perfectibility is absolutely the basis of hope. Karma, reincarnation, these are natural processes. They have natural heights, crisis points, and pitfalls. There is an ongoing sign curve, you know, that little snake-like horizontal line that we learned about in trig. But as thinkers, we can take that horizontal wavy little line and turn it on its edge. And what does it become? A spiral. It becomes motion that circles around a central point and is increased or uplifted or transmuted bit by bit by bit until the spiral becomes more and more all-inclusive and loftier and loftier in terms of spirituality. Theosophy Hall.
So the whole idea then of the stagnation idea. We're wondering though, it's like we can almost look at the idea that we're sabotaging ourselves because we don't seem to realize, or we should be realizing that there is more that we can do. And if it can be, if these issues like being checked by karma, if that can be observed and kind of detached from the personality and just keep moving and trying to help others and just, I don't know, it's such a huge, huge idea. And there's just so much work that we have to do. And we guess that we have to do that work with a positive attitude so that we can, I know we're rambling. So that we can just continue this whole idea, but we need the awareness that we are perfectible. And we think that once we actually take that in and have it impressed, that we can move on then and try to surmount the blocks that karma is putting there for us. For us to learn our lessons.
And it can be overwhelming. And probably for those among us, they're extremely downcast at the moment for whatever reason. Looking at the huge global universal picture of the collectivity of what it is to be human carries with it this the flight or freeze phenomenon, where the freeze phenomenon, where it's overwhelming, it's just too much to consider. And it can also happen that those of us that have enjoyed a duration of some kind of contentment, of some kind of sense of well-being, we may be thrust into a critical point by external circumstances. We may see horrific events erupting and suddenly wake up. Whoa, wait a minute. I got blinded. I got stagnated because things were so good, in particular for this personality, that I lost awareness of the bigger picture. I didn't realize. And instead of being overwhelmed with this huge picture, if we can go back to the analogy of the human infant, this wonderful little animalistic stage where there isn't truly a sense of spiritual oneness identity. But in that early developmental stage, there is a sense of oneness with the caregiver. And even in that very primal stage of physical and personal development, what do we see impressed in that tiny old soul who's on a new pilgrimage? We see absolutely timeless, limitless courage, confidence, and kind of a glee that no matter how tiny the baby steps, no matter how little they can begin to turn over before they completely roll, no matter how many times they topple over in an attempt to sit, fall on their noses because they're trying to crawl, those externals don't freeze them. They don't become stagnant. There is impressed in the very sense of I can, this, take a tiny step, try your best, let go of the results of the bigger picture. I guess the as a paleo hippie, there was the old phrase of think globally and act locally. You know, instead of considering this incredible worldview, bring it down. What can I do as a mind being in my periods of meditation, in my periods of generating thought, that I'd be happy to share as uplifting and emit that, inject that, energize the whole with that? And again, that little bit of a change might begin to affect our emotionality and might certainly energize our action or productivity. SL?
Well, collectively and perhaps individually, we certainly seem to be impatient with our march toward perfectibility. The sooner the better. Why not get today what we, rather than tomorrow, that standard? Why don't we become Mahatmas in this life? Why wait? Many, it just goes on and on. So, but we have this idea that nature never progresses by leaps and bounds, but always very slowly. I mean, some very, very slowly, step by step. Why is that? And how can we apply that lesson from nature to ourselves?
Why is that? Why the gradual change? Couldn't we dare each other to try to figure out when exactly did the sun rise? When exactly did it set? And when did dusk turn into darkness? Or when exactly did that tide change? I've been watching and watching and watching, but it's not until we hit extremes of high and low tide that we say, wow, there's been a major change. So why is that? Well, the philosophy offers certain fundamental ideas or propositions about eons of duration, eons of solar years and days of existence. It offers propositions that the cosmos with a K and the cosmos with a C and this particular plane of this globe, there's a oneness, a vastness. And as we know from our struggles to be mindful, to bring that mindfulness into a pure form of motivation, to bring that into a pure form of the use of word, of the use of action, we know it takes a long time to try to ponder and to apply. And so too with great nature. It was extremely, extremely huge periods of time before the very, very ethereal essence emanating from that unknowable absolute gradually began to transmute, to morph, however we want to try to think of it in English, into some degree of substance, some degree of reality, and then continue to transmute and morph into the present forms. And we can think of even as this is reflected again in the life of a fetus and an infant. Theosophically, we're told that there is this period of developmental attraction of skandhas at the most ethereal astral level. And then comes the physicality of the fetal development. Then comes a period of not only 9 months gestation of physical formation, but another 3 months or so of continued physical formation, and then gradually we see the onslaught of the development of the infant, the toddler, the child, and it's not, it is said, until the age of 7 or so, that monastic self-conscious entities fully become incorporated and in charge and overseeing the activities of the child 7 and older. And now brain research is that it's not until 28 years old that most souls come into the full use of a fully mature physical brain. So we have all these exemplars in nature. And why is that? Because there's all of this communal development of spirit, of soul, of mind, of psychism or emotionality, personality, physicality. It takes a long time for all of that to come together at the individualist level, let alone at the communal collective level. Theosophy Hall, I think I saw a hand.
So behind will stands desire, and it's colored by our imagination. So the ideas that we hold are crucial. And Theosophy is here to try to dispel the teachings that we are poor, miserable sinners, because that really makes us into just materialists. Either materialists on this plane, we've got to get all I can while I can, or materialists on the spiritual plane, thinking that, well, I want my eternal reward, the whole thing about sent eternity, that I live this one life, and then I either experience joy or experience suffering for all eternity, whatever that is. So imagination is colored by that. And it's really, we see the effects everywhere in society.
Imagination is a spiritual, soulful power, isn't it? And imagination, the ability in the human state to create an image and hold it and sustain it, and then project it into the future, bring it into physicality, or to use it as a guideline for the fleshing out of our aspirations. Imagination is so key. And what just came to mind was an incredibly awful education experiment. Where real human children were used as guinea pigs. Two teachers were given classes at the beginning of the year, and in a private training scenario with a psychologist and a counselor, one teacher was told emphatically with false data that their class was a class of geniuses. The second teacher, separately, a different training session, was offered condolences that their class of students for the year were hopeless, that they were tremendously impaired, very divergent in their abilities, and were not going to be able to achieve much during the course of the year. Year proceeds. The two teachers have the strong imaginative image about what their individual class of innocent children is like and what can be for them. At the end of the year, the statistics, the testing on the two classes of children were done. And only then were the teachers informed that statistically, in every aspect of ability and potentiality, these were identical children. All of these children shared the same potentiality for learning, and perfectibility. The teacher that had been convinced that she could imagine at the beginning of the year limitless opportunity and limitless potentiality for that class, her students tested off the wall, off the charts on academic achievement. The other teacher, her students, in which the teacher's imagination was dwarfed or contained or twisted, those students scored very, very much lower on their standardized learning instruments. Identical students in the same scenario, two gifted teachers, the key was imagination and the creative use of perception. And then that was imposed on these poor, innocent souls, these little kids, one group of which literally lost a year of education. So imagination is potent. It doesn't come from the brain. It is a soul power. And we all need to be on guard moment by moment by moment in our lives. Am I thinking from an imaginative base of spirituality, or am I letting my knee-jerk reaction reflect an imagination that was trained or dwarfed at some earlier period, some thought that's far less than real? SL, your hand went up.
Yes, regarding this idea that we're poor, miserable sinners, or that doctrine, historically, it was brought into the church around the 5th century with the doctrine of original sin. But we have an interesting chat. Can human perfectibility, or the doctrine of human perfectibility, be found in the teachings of Jesus? Do we have statements in the New Testament to that regard?
One of the most interesting studies, if you're just using the New Testament that has been through translations and twists from the Western Roman Catholic Church down through all the Protestant array of churches, if that's the rendition that you're using, you can look in the book of Matthew, which contains things like the Sermon on the Mount, which apparently linguistically is one of the oldest portions of that collection of New Testament works. And if you read something simple like the Lord's Prayer in the light of theosophy, in the light of the fundamental principles of theosophy, you will find an invitation to know the God within, to understand that the God within is shared by one and all, that the whole notion of will prayer is to be conducted in the closet of the heart, periods of meditation, and therefore the underlying premise is that each and every soul can accomplish this, and each and every soul can find this completely doable. If you are more in line with the Gnostic teachings, which are a further blend, a pre-Western church set of documents that are Judeo-Christian, kind of a philosophical point of view, you'll find far more evidence that we're not to seek for external physicality or oneness in a particular life, but there is this cycle, if you will, of avatars, of greatness that's possible for each and all. Did anything come to anybody else's mind on that issue of the New Testament? SL?
Well, just some particular quotes we recall. Know ye not that ye are gods and the kingdom of heaven is within? I go to my Father, you go unto yours. Follow not me, but the path I show. All these phrases, which are almost mantras, if we think about them, encourage the idea for us to be perfect ourselves, and that we have the capacity to do so within ourselves.
So one of the most potent ideas that we could close with this morning is know ye not that ye are the temple of God, and that the Spirit of God dwelleth in you. So know that you, the personal personality, brain, and body, the astral body, are the temple. The Spirit of God, the divinity, the ability to correct, is within and in the spiritual heart in each and every single human being. And in that, we're one. There's something to imagine and to bring about as a reality in the external world. So our time is at hand, but we'll see you Wednesday night for a continued study of the ocean. And thank you so much for coming this morning.